In her book, The Homing Place, Rachel Bryant starts with the Wollastook watershed, named the St. John by Samuel de Champlain. Seasonal flooding, like we're experiencing now, changes the landscape year after year. It was a source of frustration to loyalist landowners back in the 1800s, but it's also one of the ways Bryant starts to address the ideas of colonization, history, and place. Good morning.
Good morning, Jens.
What prompted you to write The Homing Place?
Well, The Homing Place is both an academic project that I wrote for professional reasons, but it's also a very personal work. And I believe that scholarship should come from a personal place, just like any other type of writing. It's a work about learning how to listen to Indigenous people and about how the context in which settlers from this region understand themselves make that work very difficult. So it's about how the context in which we understand ourselves act as barriers to listening and how we can learn to transcend those barriers.
So how were you personally connected to that?
To that project of listening?
Yeah, and the fact that you wanted to examine it in that context.
So I am a Maritimer. I was born in Fredericton. My family came here in the 18th century from what is currently the United States. My father's family is the Steves family, a very well-known New Brunswick name, especially in the Moncton or Hillsborough area. They came here via from Germany via Philadelphia in 1766, and my mother's family actually came across originally on the Mayflower, so my roots are in Plymouth Colony. But Maritimers aren't trained to look at those places to see their histories, to see themselves, to see the creation of their mythologies. We have different stories about how we came to be Maritimers, how we got to live on the land that we live on, how the salt got in our blood, as Alistair MacLeod would say. So we have these mythologies about how we came here, but we don't contextualize them in places like colonial New England or colonial Virginia. And I actually moved away from the Maritimes. I moved to Texas and started studying early American and colonial literature and started seeing the creation of my cultural mythologies in these early texts from the 17th century. And it was very eye-opening for me because, again, we're not trained to look for ourselves in these places. But contextualizing myself in this way I found very useful because I saw my ancestors essentially in the process of creating themselves in this place, creating their identity, creating the mythologies that in many ways we continue to live inside here in the Atlantic provinces. So I found that context essential because it showed my ancestors in the process of consolidating an identity against place. And we very much in the Maritimes have a mythology that our identity comes from place, that we are made by the place where we live. So I was very interested to find these early texts that showed my ancestors in the process of not being made by place, but consolidating themselves against place and in the process displacing those people who were made by place.
So made somewhere else and brought here, and almost, you know, implanted into our roots here.
Right.
And how did that displace what was already happening here and the place that the original settlers had here in our region?
So, for example, the Steves family, who came here in 1766, they're a family that is known today as the permanent settlers. There's six or seven families known as permanent settler families. And they came here because a company that was owned and administrated by Benjamin Franklin in Philadelphia was offering lands, Mi'kmaq lands, in southeastern New Brunswick, that they would give away to any family that consisted of at least five Protestants. So six or seven families came here and established themselves and became very influential, took over, you know, all of this obviously stolen land that was administered from Philadelphia, and obviously displaced people who those lands belonged to. People who had been living here for millennia, people whose identity and language and culture had developed in concert with that land for millennia. And in time, we gave ourselves stories that made us feel as though we were those people. We were those people who were made by this place. although that's not, in fact, accurate. And those contexts, as I said earlier, that we've given ourselves, they make it very difficult for us to understand the people who were made by the place, the people who see land and animal and non-human beings as kin, who have kin relationships with what we would call resources, who don't just see the land and the and what lives on the land as resources, who see those things as kin. We've given ourselves a lot of work to do. We've protected ourselves against the past by living in, by continuing to live inside these contexts. And it's only by going back and sort of seeing ourselves in these new contexts that we can truly be transformed and truly learn to be good neighbors and truly learn to listen.
Well, let's talk about listening and how that will change things. What do you think?
Sure. So one of the things I talk about in The Homing Place, I mean, it's a work of literary history in some sense. So one of the things I talk about is how a dominant settler society here has decided what gets to count as literature. So we've decided that, for example, Canadian literature is words that were written down on paper in a European language on this side of what became the Canada-US border after a certain date. And that's a very specific cultural construction of what gets to count as what we call Canadian literature. Before we arrived, before my ancestors arrived, before Europeans arrived on what Indigenous people call Turtle Island, Indigenous people were practicing their own forms of literature. They weren't all writing. Some things were things like wampum belts, things like baskets. But they did have a lot of pictographic writing on birch bark in this region in particular. They had established literary systems. And when we don't count those things as literature, when we don't factor them in to our analyses, we can't really understand what contemporary Indigenous writers are doing. So what we do is we absorb texts like those into this idea of you know, canlit, but they become sort of a minority extension of this settler construct that prevents us from being able to historicize or contextualize these contemporary voices, because we can't go back and say, how is this text a continuation of this culture that developed on this land across millennia? Because we've made those early stories unintelligible to ourselves by completely eliminating them from what we would call literary studies, for example. So that's an example how literary studies begins to work systematically to exclude Indigenous voices and to prevent us from being able to understand the complexities of Indigenous voices.
So you were reading baskets and wampum belts, is that right?
Right. I mean, that's part of my work, and it's a lot of work. I mean, I'm a settler person. This is a process. I'm learning how to listen, and it's a process. So one of my chapters in the text is about the Passamaquoddy Nation, who is not recognized in Canada as a nation because they're recognized in the U.S., and you can't be an Indigenous nation in both the U.S. and Canada, in our opinion. So we've failed to honor treaty rights that were given during the Peace and Friendship Treaty era for the Passamaquoddy people. Because in our mythology, the Passamaquoddy were pushed out of New Brunswick by the Loyalists. They all moved to Maine, and that's where they live, and now they're a U.S. tribe, we like to say. So I look at wampum that the Passamaquoddy circulated during the period of the American Revolutionary War to invoke the strength of a regional confederacy, the Wabanaki Confederacy of Nations, of which the Passamaquoddy are a part, to show how they were using their literacies to assert themselves in their region, as they have always done, and how they were invoking the strength of this confederacy that really predates and transcends this idea of Canada and the United States. That is just one example of reading wampum. But again, there are many literacies that we've excluded from literary studies in Canada and in the U.S. And it's a process of, you know, learning how to hear these other voices, to read these other texts, to understand things in ways that we have been actively trained not to understand them.
It's been so nice to talk about your work this morning, and I know we're only scratching the surface, but a lot more to be heard tomorrow afternoon at the library. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much, Hans. I appreciate the opportunity.
Rachel Bryan is the author of The Homing Place. It's nominated for a New Brunswick Book Award in the nonfiction category. She has a reading at the St. John Free Public Library tomorrow afternoon from noon until 1.